Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. It's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokat. Thanks for tuning into our award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. This morning, we're going to visit with Connecticut's new Attorney General, William Tong, and talk about his ascent to the state's top law enforcement job and learn how he's keeping his focus on a number of issues both here and across the country that could impact the health, welfare, and safety of Connecticut residents. Then we're going to tell you how to fill your summer with knowledge and training that can help you sustain and grow your business with the founder of the Women's Business Development Council. We'll run down a number of free WBDC seminars, webinars, and one-on-one opportunities happening in the coming weeks. Then we're going to close taking a look at Connecticut's new mental health parity law that was just signed by Governor Ned Lamont and begin learning how it will support and assist the thousands of state residents and families challenged by mental health issues. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokat, right after this reminder. Folks from all over Connecticut are invited to hit the road and head for Center Streets, a carefree and car-free summer event in West Hartford Center coming up on Sunday, August 25th from 9 to 1. Ride your bicycle or scooter or take a stroll down the street without automobiles. Participating restaurants are going to offer brunch specials and free food surprises. Many merchants are going to feature discounts and great live music will be performed all morning. The event is the signature community initiative of Bike West Hartford, a nonprofit organization that promotes bicycle friendly policies and programs in that area. You can get all the details now at bikewesthartford.org.
So I've had the great pleasure of meeting and working with and interviewing a number of attorney generals here in the state of Connecticut. And the 25th is William Tong, and he's visiting with us right now. He took office January 9th, 2019, as the first Asian American elected to the statewide level here in Connecticut. So Attorney General Tong, thanks for being part of the program this morning.
Thank you.
I want to roll back to your childhood. You were the son of parents who ran a restaurant, right?
Yeah.
And you worked there yourself. Let's talk about a little bit about whether there was one person or one incident in your younger days that may have been the inspiration for you to go into public service.
So it's become a bit of a cliche to say that we're all immigrants, but we are. Mm-hmm. You know, and my parents came here with nothing. My dad actually remembers that he had just 57 cents in his pocket when he arrived in Hartford, Connecticut. And I'm very fortunate. My parents got together. They met in Bloomfield and got married and opened a Chinese restaurant and busted, you know, their butts for almost 20 years in a restaurant, 7 days a week, 15 hours a day. And you know, I'm very fortunate that I was born in Hartford, Connecticut, in Hartford Hospital as the first American in my family. And, you know, it means a lot to me, all this talk and angst and, frankly, anger around immigrants, because when you talk about birthright citizenship, for example, I have birthright citizenship. I'm the first American born to immigrants in my family. When you hear the president talk about denaturalizing American citizens, he's talking about my parents. And when he refers to people derisively as anchor babies, he's talking about me. Mm. And I'm really no different than a lot of people in our state. And my story isn't remarkable because so many people share it. The really defining moments in my life happened in that restaurant when I was a kid, when I started getting a little older, fifth grade, sixth grade, business started to go in the wrong direction for my parents. They ran a fairly large Chinese restaurant. The market was changing in Wethersfield, Connecticut. And so I had to work nights and weekends with my parents, working side by side with them. To this day, I can cook almost everything on a standard Chinese restaurant menu. So I guess if this attorney general thing doesn't work out, I always have that as a backup. But working in that restaurant nights and weekends, not hanging out with my friends, not going to concerts, not going to movies, I was keenly aware at the sacrifices that my parents had to make. And I was keenly aware that in our dining room, there's a community of people that we were serving, and there was a door between the dining room and the kitchen, and I was always keenly aware of that barrier, of that door, and that I wasn't a part of that community, that life in the dining room. And so I always felt compelled to do everything I could to kick that door in and to get in the dining room and literally get a seat at the table. And I think that's what a lot of people, not just immigrants, are looking for every day.
So you brought the best of your talent and wherewithal to serve through the door to actually affect that in reality.
Yeah, I don't know if it's talent, but I know it's probably grit, you know, and you have to have a certain amount of endurance and willingness to put yourself out there and a lot of fight. And that's what I got from my parents, that fight and that grit. And I think I share that with a lot of people in Connecticut.
Through your 12 years at the as a representative in the 147th district, did you begin to formulate the idea that as an attorney, that could be a stepping stone to actually running for and becoming attorney general, or at least aspiring to it?
Well, it was really surprising to me that George Jepson did not run for re-election. I don't think anybody expected that. So I wasn't planning on it. And that's a really honest answer. You know, I might have done something else, but I really wasn't thinking that the attorney general would open. But when it opened, I was the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, one of the critical functions and focuses of my public service career has been on stopping gun violence and ending the epidemic of gun violence, which I consider to be the true national emergency in this country. And having been a part of the team that wrote the post-Sandy Hook reforms, having been part of the – well, I wrote and passed the domestic violence gun law and the bump stock ban and introduced the ban on ghost guns and all of that work you know, as a legislator, really drew on my training as a lawyer. And so it all came together. And then when George announced that he wasn't running again, so much of what we are doing in the Attorney General's office, from consumer protection, you know, a lot of antitrust work that we're doing now on generic drugs, for example, consumer protection with respect to the opioid crisis, criminal justice reform, stopping gun violence, domestic violence, all those things I had done as the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. And so it made a lot of sense to take those experiences and those skills to the Attorney General's office. I will say this. I can't imagine doing my job now as Attorney General without having done my previous job as chairman of the Judiciary Committee. It was the place and to get trained for this job, and that training has been invaluable.
I'm glad you said that, because I find it most interesting that so few people in the history of Connecticut have had the opportunity to actually serve in a legislative capacity where they've saw the recipe come to fruition and then become either the commissioner or the elected executive official who gets to then literally take the work that they did and carry it on, perhaps even improve it. Can you talk a little bit about the dynamic of administering, enforcing, or supporting some of the legislative initiatives that you played a role in as a lawmaker?
Yeah, it's incredibly important to be conversant in all of those issues, but also to be able to navigate state government, you know, the Yukon Health Center, for example, the Department of Corrections, the Claims Commissioner, the Department of Children and Families. There are so many different agencies and departments and areas of focus and jurisdiction. And, you know, my first responsibility every day when I walk in the office is to be the lawyer for the state of Connecticut. And that means being a lawyer for all those agencies, all those departments, all those officials, the governor, the legislature, and it's really important to speak their language. And though I may not be an expert on everything that they do or even come close to being an expert, I feel like I was trained at least to ask the right questions and to recognize what I don't know and to make sure that I do the research that I have to do and that my team does the same thing to run down and understand what we don't know so that we can provide the best advice. And again, I can't imagine doing that without having been a legislator first.
We're enjoying the opportunity, which I hope will be the first of many, to chat with our 25th Attorney General here in Connecticut, William Tong. He took office earlier this year, and I want to say a lot of people, you know, they assume the responsibility of a job. You, as I mentioned when we met earlier in the year, I thought, were one of those people that didn't have shoes to fill. Mm. You had a baton to take in the race. And actually, it's kind of like almost science fiction in terms of the many different races and the many scopes that baton represents. What was the most exciting or important initiative that you were able to take on from Attorney General Jepson that you feel proud and capable of carrying on to fruition?
I think you put it extraordinarily well. Although I do feel like I have shoes to fill, I guess that's another metaphor, but really what
George
happened.
George never really was a good shoe. Yeah. He wasn't a shoe guy, I got to say.
He has big feet.
Right?
Here's what I would say. I think you really hit the nail on the head. It was we in this state have been extraordinarily good at passing the baton in the Office of the Attorney General. Joe Lieberman passed it to Clarin. Artie Riddle passed it to Dick Blumenthal and to George Jepson and now to me. And it was a very purposeful passing of the baton. And so George handed me the generic drug price fixing case, which is the largest probably antitrust case in this country now and one of the largest in our nation's history and maybe the largest private sector cartel in history in the generic drug manufacturing industry. And so What we've come upon is a massive industry-wide conspiracy to fix prices and to allocate market share. And when I was running for Attorney General, George started the process of educating me about that case because he knew that once we took office, that would be one of the biggest things we do, not just for Connecticut but for this country. And so is it exciting? I guess it's exciting. It's hard. It's a lot of hard work, and I don't think I get much of a chance to enjoy the excitement as I feel like we're constantly trying to strengthen our case and to expand our investigation, and to answer one of the most important and elusive public policy questions that we face today, which is why is healthcare and why are prescription drug prices so expensive? And I think this is an answer.
We know that one very important initiative of your office is to fine-tune and improve its consumer response. That seems like one area that is uniquely Connecticut-centric. Maybe crumbling foundations could be another one. But it seems like so much of the work that you not only stepped into in January of this year or developed or initiated since involves other states or the entire nation. Do you see it as a tightrope walk to have to represent Connecticut constituents first, even though there are so many implications in regards to the work you're doing that have happened or occurred on a regional or national level?
Yeah, I don't think there's often a conflict. You know, there's so much that we have in common with other states and so many of the fights, for example, around the environment. You know, Connecticut, I often say now, sits at the end of America's tailpipe. And so if you're trying to make coal great again, as the president is in West Virginia or Ohio or Pennsylvania, and you loosen emission standards and you allow coal and fossil fuel companies to pollute, all of that air pollution blows downwind through the tailpipe into Connecticut, and it blows into New York, and it blows into Massachusetts. And so all of us are in the same boat. In that way, I find multi-state coordination to be very, very easy in that we're all very much aligned. We're all aligned on the generic drug price fixing case. We're all aligned on opioids and stopping the national epidemic of addiction. So I don't feel like I'm often called upon to make a choice between Connecticut and other states and their interests. Of course, that's an easy decision to make. I'll always be with Connecticut.
In an earlier interview that we just were part of, it was great to hear you say, and I'm paraphrasing now, but the individual taxpayers of the state of Connecticut have their own busy lives, and they don't have necessarily the time or the wherewithal or the finances to be able to go after someone who has harmed or maligned them from a consumer standpoint. And so if we're going to wrap for this session of conversation, let's drill into a little bit more of your plans to take consumer and constituent service to a new place in the Attorney General's office, or perhaps return it to a place that it once was.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I think that's my essential role, which is to protect and defend the families and the people of this state. And I don't know anybody, unless you're extraordinarily, extraordinarily wealthy, I don't know anybody in my day-to-day life who doesn't feel squeezed, you know, whether by their cell phone bills or electricity bills or, you know, some robocaller cheats your mom or your grandmother or yourself. You know, or you buy a defective product and you have no effective recourse, or you have a service provider that comes and does your roof and doesn't do a good job. So many of us feel squeezed by modern life, and there are a variety of powerful forces, I think, bearing down on all of us: pharmaceutical companies, big energy companies, and those are just two good examples. And I think sometimes the only thing standing between those powerful forces and the people of this state are the 200 lawyers in the Attorney General's office and the 315 total staff that we have, pushing back on those powerful forces and creating space for people to breathe and to raise a family and do what they have to do every day just to live happy and productive lives. So that's our job. In order to do that well, we need a stronger, bigger consumer assistance function. That means people in the office ready to pick up the phone, return emails. We get messages from texts, from emails, from our Facebook page, from Twitter. People are constantly trying to get to us one way or the other, and we need to have an apparatus to respond to everybody, not just to take their concerns and complaints in so that we can deal with them in the immediate sense, but also so that we can track what sorts of things are happening and what sort of larger systemic changes we need to make.
In closing, I'm paraphrasing again, but it's said that you could tell a lot about a man or a person by observing the way that they treat animals and pets. And so it was really, really in scouring your biography for ideas of questions. It was thrilling to see that you've literally admitted that you have too many pets.
Too many pets.
Tell us about your pets.
So my daughter Eleanor and I are avid fish keepers. She's 13. Oh. So we are
salt
and freshwater.
Wow.
Which is like entirely too much work for an attorney general at 1 a.m. to be doing his water changes of his saltwater tank. Because, of course, the kids don't do it, right? I end up doing it. And then, even though they promised
to take care of those fish.
They promised, well, we're the pet
Daddy.
Store. And my wife loves wire-haired fox terriers. She had a number of fox terriers growing up, and so did her dad. And we are now on our third wire-haired fox terrier. We had two others that have since passed away. They lived wonderful and long lives. And I guess I'm just getting older. Celeste is a puppy. The reason why we had two other wire-haired fox terriers is because when I proposed to my wife in 2001, I gave her a diamond ring, but just to make sure, I also gave her a puppy, just to like seal the deal. So that's why we have too many pets.
Well, from one terrier owner to another.
What do you have?
I have a West Highland Terrier.
Yeah. So a Westie is basically a different colored.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. They're the boss.
Yeah, they're the boss.
Right, yeah. So from one terrier lover to another, this is why I think the future is so bright for you, Attorney General Tong.
Thanks.
But I do look forward to chatting with you again as the award-winning For the People has been so fortunate to host attorney generals prior to you. And I look forward to more conversations. Thank you so much.
Happy to come back anytime.
Well, we're moving into July, where a lot of people start to take it easy. But if you're a fledgling business person, an entrepreneur, somebody who knows in their heart and soul that they could take their business to the next level, especially if you're a woman business owner, entrepreneur, or someone who thinks they just need a little help or a little support, maybe a little push to get their finances in better order or be better stewards of their finances. Maybe you've got a legal question or you don't know how to use that social networking app that everybody's talking about. There's one place to go to get answers, help, support, education, and a place where you could feel like you can belong and be more successful. That's the Women's Business Development Council. The WBDC is a nonprofit dedicated to providing the tools and resources to help women thrive in business. And I'm so excited to be on the line again with Fran Pastore. She's the CEO and founder of the WBDC. Fran and I go back to that little one-room back office in New Haven in the first few weeks and months when she thought that she would like to maybe do something to help women and other business people to be more successful. And man, have you racked up the numbers, Fran? 14,000 plus clients served since 1997 and generating $254 million in gross revenue among your clients in all these years. In the last 5 years, what am I saying? In 5 years, $254 million, most of it generated right here in Connecticut. This has really become a powerhouse, Fran. I mean, did you ever really think in 1997 when we had those first couple of conversations when you got things started that we'd be on the line in 2019 just keeping that little engine that could going?
You know, John, I didn't even think about it. Back then, I was probably like most of the clients that come to the Women's Business Development Council, just trying to figure it out and figure out my passion and work through that passion to create a business. And here we are 22 years later, and I'm so grateful to you that you have always been there for WBDC and always interested in our work and interested in supporting and promoting the good work that we do for women across Connecticut. So thank you so much.
Oh, sure. Well, and talk about racking up the stats and accomplishments. You have also, I mean, I do my thing, but you certainly make
the success that you and the WBC has enjoyed all these years, serving 3 years as an appointed member to the President's National Women's Business Council, an independent source of advice and counsel to the President of the United States Congress and the U.S. Small Business Administration, working on the Board of Women Impacting Public Policy with in conjunction with the U.S. State Department and UConn's Office of Global Affairs. You taught women entrepreneurs in Costa Rica financial management. You worked in Turkey, Istanbul. You're spreading the WBDC resource to all points.
We do our best. You know, we're charged with supporting women in Connecticut, but we've done such a good job at that we have, not just myself personally, but the organization has received, you know, national and international recognition by being invited to participate in some of these initiatives around the globe. In fact, just yesterday, I was invited to take part in the State Department's launch of the Women's Global Prosperity and Development Initiative, which is being launched by Ivanka Trump, who's the advisor to the president. So I'm interested to see what that's going to be about and how that might help women around the globe and certainly in our country.
Sure. And I guess, you know, truth be told, we should get down to the most basic and important thing that needs to be clarified. It's not like if a man shows up at a WBDC event, the alarms are going to go off and the gates lock. There are opportunities for men to learn and benefit from WBDC programs, aren't there?
Oh, absolutely. Well, first, let me say that, you know, we, by law, cannot discriminate. We happen to be the Women's Business Development Council, but I always say real men come to WBDC. And about 15% of our clients at any given time are men. And so also a lot of women have partners that are males. Mm-hmm. And in husband and wife settings, we see a lot of couples that come in. Mm-hmm. So we do work with men all the time, and I'm really proud of that.
Yeah, and also critically important because $13 million worth of taxes have been paid by WBDC clients to just the state of Connecticut in the last 5 years. So, you know, these are powerful revenue-generating situations. Last couple times we talked, you were ramping up your latest office in New London. So I guess I wanted to ask, how is that going out east?
Really, really well. You know, just at the same time that we launched our office, former Governor Malloy launched a major investment in New London, and that has been followed up with Governor Lamont's major investment in New London in the pier, in the, you know, wind technology. Yeah. And so we're so glad that we are there to be part of this economic revival in New London. There's a lot of opportunity there. And it's an interesting and different part of Connecticut, which is something that I have found as I've traveled around the state, that we have a small state, but there are so many unique personalities. And so our team up there is doing a great job. We are bringing in the kind of clients that we are looking for and are beginning to make impact. More importantly, the community response has been overwhelming and welcoming. We're recruiting volunteers. That's gone really well. So we're really happy with where things are going in that neck of the woods, if you will.
Excellent. And as you mentioned, financial literacy has sort of become an interesting foundational block of the WBDC, because it almost seems like the opportunity to provide loans came first with this innovative initiative that WBDC launched a few years back. But the financial literacy training seemed to really ramp up at the same time, which makes complete sense, because you don't want to be loaning money to somebody who is armed with hope and energy, but not with the necessary tools to best manage that money.
Well, and that is exactly what we learned in, you know, during the research process of establishing a microloan fund. We knew that there were reasons why our colleagues around the state who are charged with providing microloans to entrepreneurs, men and women, we knew there was a reason why they were not providing those loans that are so necessary. And we were bound and determined to make an impact there, and our research showed us that there was a need. What our research didn't show us was that so many people lack the basic financial acumen that is required to secure that capital and give those investors, be it a bank or a non-bank lender, give those investors what they needed in return by way of confidence in the knowledge that these people really knew, these entrepreneurs really understood their finances. And so shortly after we did our research, we came to the conclusion that what we really needed to do was to ramp up our financial education program and provide that financial and economic basic training to men and women, mostly women, of course, mm-hmm. as the Women's Business Development Council, most of our clients are, but really to provide the basics on understanding your personal finances, whether or not you're going into business, because without that, your opportunities for success in life and in business are greatly diminished.
Yeah.
So that's become a very, very important piece of our work. And in fact, today there is a webinar from Credit to Capital, how personal finances drive business success. And that's something that we really, we just believe in. It's really part of our basic philosophy. It's not just about women's economic empowerment. It's about economic empowerment in general, because when you have control over your finances, and it doesn't matter, you know, what income level you are at, you have to really understand and be able to communicate those numbers to a potential investor or a lender.
Right.
And that's where we see so much risk being mitigated, if you have that knowledge.
We're going to take a quick break and come back and chat some more with Fran Pastore from the Women's Business Development Council right after this break. Stick with us. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Connoisseur Media's Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. The 4th annual Freedom Isn't Free Ride is coming up Saturday, August 3rd. Kickstands go up at 11:30 a.m. from their departure site at St. Pius X Church in Fairfield, and the ride ends at Joey C's in Stratford. All net proceeds benefit homeless veterans. The Freedom Isn't Free Ride Foundation assists those veterans who fall through the cracks to secure housing which meets their needs. Hey, you can pre-register at Joey C's on August 1st from 6 to 9 p.m. and get a discount for riders, and plan to party after the ride and enjoy food raffles and live music. Need more information? Just go to thefreedomisn'tfreefoundation.net. Well, we're back. We've got about 5 or 6 more minutes with Fran Pastore. She's the founder and CEO of WBDC, the Women's Business Development Council. Speaking of personal finance counseling, just a little bit later this week, as we play this on July 14th, you have a personal finance counseling day in Derby from 9:30 to 4:30. And then about a week later on July 24th, another personal finance counseling day in New London. And then looking for the Stamford one, if you're interested in Down County, you want to check that one and register or plan to attend on August 14th, and then back around again to Derby on August 15th. So before the end of the summer, 4 opportunities for anyone to spend a day getting the necessary knowledge and support to put their personal finances in order. And maybe then it's time for some small business counseling, which is another staple and reoccurring event with WBDC. Their Small Business Counseling Day in New Haven is July 17th. They've got another one in New Haven on July 31st. And then their third one of the summer in New Haven on August 13th. So in the last, you know, 4 or 5 minutes that we have, Fran, I wanted to just drill into a couple of the other individual workshops that seem so interesting.
Sure.
The first being about branding. Stand out from the crowd with personal branding is coming up in just a couple days in Derby on July 16th. Kind of like speed dating. Give me the the 1 minute spiel on personal branding.
Well, personal branding is so important, and it's especially a passion of mine because I really believe that, you know, we all know that people size you up the minute you walk into a room, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're trying to do, especially for women, is to increase and enhance your confidence by knowing how to speak about yourself, using language, whether it's in print, social media, how you might describe yourself on your business card or your website, why all of that is so, so important. And most importantly is your body language. How do you connect with your audience? And so we're bringing in a professional who is going to help you learn how to better brand yourself. Just a little sidebar. I had a conversation with an entrepreneur just the other day who was in business for 20 years, closed her doors from a brick-and-mortar retail, and went to Instagram. And she's got purely an online business now. And we were talking about what products are selling. And it's a clothing business. Mm. What products are selling the most? Now, this woman had a personal brand in her business. People went to her retail store because she was there. When she wasn't there, nothing was sold.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, the strangest thing, Fran, she said, every item that I personally model on Instagram sells off the rack.
Mm.
And I was trying to explain to her. She said, why do you think that is? And I had to explain to her, that's because you built a personal brand for 20 years and people are following you. And if Tony's wearing that outfit, everybody wants it.
Hmm.
And so when you build that personal brand and you have a following, and by the way, this is whether you are in business for yourself or you're working inside a corporation or any other kind of a business that you are an employee of.
Yeah.
Building your personal brand is an important, important piece of your success.
Super. We should say that workshop, as I said, is coming up in Derby on July 16th. It's an evening class, so you can spend the day doing whatever and then head down to Derby for the 5:30 to 7 stand out from the crowd with personal branding.
Now, it's going to be a great class.
Yep. Now, heading over to New London on July 30th, 5:30 to 8:30, is a business essentials track class called Build Your Bail, B-A-I-L. So this is a real mixed bag of critical information for business people, right?
It's fun. We've kind of coined that phrase. I'm sure people use it all throughout small business, but we kind of like that because it's a little bit of a double entendre, right? You don't have, you're not going to have anybody to bail you out, except those four people.
Yeah.
So what we find is that most entrepreneurs are so passionate about their business and they don't really take the time that they need to learn about all the important other critical elements of running a business and why you need that dream team. And so your banker, your accountant, your insurance agent, and your legal advisor are critical components to running a successful business. You don't have to operate in a vacuum. You're going to hire an accountant anyway to do your taxes, so you reach out to them when you have a question. You are going to be, absolutely, you have a bank account, so talk to your banker about what opportunities there are for you if you have cash flow issues, if you need commercial loan.
Sure.
Your insurance agent is always going to be there to protect you and tell you what kind of insurance you need to protect yourself. And, of course, your lawyer. So most people, male or female, get very excited about their business concept and their business idea, and oftentimes jump in with both feet. what we try to do at WBDC is mitigate those risks to a startup and expansion by helping people think through the pitfalls and making sure that they are conscious of who they need to reach out to for help, including WBDC.
Yep. We also mentioned in the intro about those apps and computer programs that people really always think they're going to learn, and then they get into it and try to teach themselves, and it sounds, it seems confusing, or people say, oh, you need to be on, or you need to be doing, or you need this app. You've got answers for that. You've got a LinkedIn Lunch and Learn clinic coming up in Stamford on August 6th. There's a QuickBooks Counseling Day in New London on August 8th, and then a Twitter Masterclass in New London on August 13th. So those are all really critical as well. But before we run out of time, we have to talk about all the way into November and an exciting event coming up on November 1st before we say farewell to you, Fran. What's cooking on the 1st of November for people to save the date?
Yeah, we're really excited. You know, we're a nonprofit organization. We do one big fundraiser every year. It's our chance to share with our investors the impact that they are making on women throughout the state. And so we honor usually 10 to 15 clients. They are Women Rising clients, awardees. They're Women Rising awardees. And we acknowledge them and congratulate them for the work that they've done in either expanding or launching their business. And this year we're really excited. PricewaterhouseCoopers is our marquee sponsor. And Roz Brooks, who just made partner after many, many years with the company, is giving us the honor of honoring her. And Allison Malloy, who is Stanford's own homegrown entrepreneur who just recently sold her business for the second time to Kodak. She's one of the few, one of the only women in technology in Southern Connecticut. She will also be honored, as well as Susan Lasota, who is the highest-ranking woman at State Street Global Bank, if you think of the Fearless Girl statue on Wall Street. So we'll be honoring those three women and acknowledging them as mentors and leaders by because of the work that they've done to advance other women. And then we have, I believe, 12 or 13 WBDC clients who have either, you know, taken their business from an online business to bricks and mortar, or who have recently secured capital to grow their business, or who have, you know, become certified as women-owned businesses so that they and just got their first corporate contract. That's the kind of client we're acknowledging. And we want our investors to know that their money's being well spent and what the ROI is. And so we are also having Alexandra Labenthal. I don't know if you and I, John, are of the same genre, but Alexandra Labenthal is, her grandmother in the 1920s launched one of the first bond trading firms on Wall Street, certainly the only woman to do so. And Alexandra herself is going to be our moderator on November 1st. And she is, we're really excited about that. She is a so committed to women and women's economic empowerment. So we're honored that all of these phenomenal women are lending their time and their talent and their expertise for what will be another sellout event. We have about 750 people that typically attend this event.
Super. Well, it was well worth going over our time by a minute or two to make to make sure people knew that. No, it's completely fine. Great information. And people can learn more about the Women's Business Development Council, not just for women, men too. Always welcome, and track and plan and register for or make your plans to attend the various training sessions going all the way through to the end of the year. You can set your calendar up and learn something new and valuable for yourself or your business virtually every week, a couple times a week, once a month, every couple months. You get the schedule, and as soon as it's squared away, you'll be able to register and get into this November 1st event. Just go to ctwbdc.com. Connecticut Women's Business Development Council, ctwbdc.org. Fran Pastore has been our guest, as she has for many years since establishing the Women's Business Development Council, a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing tools and resources to help women and men thrive in business. Fran, great to speak with you. And once again, thank you so much for all you do. Good luck with the newest venture in DC, and we will be seeing you around at various WBDC activities. Thanks again for being on the show. Well, folks may have heard that earlier this week, Governor Ned Lamont has signed legislation that will ensure insurance coverage for people in the state suffering from mental health and substance use disorder conditions, as they would for other illnesses. The law known as the Mental Health Parity Act delivers parity for behavioral health care, recognizing that mental health and substance use conditions are equal to physical illnesses. Regular listeners know that we've been talking about this issue for quite a long time, particularly with U.S. Senator Chris Murphy, who is trying to pioneer this initiative at the federal level for the entire country. And it's great to hear Connecticut once again is on the forefront of making this type of initiative happen. We're so pleased to join our friends at Mountainside and meet Dan Smith. He's Director of Community Development for Mountainside. That treatment center is celebrating the passage of the new legislation by Governor Ned Lamont. Dan, welcome to the program and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, John.
So this is going to be the first of a number of quick conversations we're going to have with organizations that interact, serve, and support individuals with either addiction issues or mental health issues or both. So tell me a little bit about how the Mental Health Parity Act is going to impact the constituents that you serve at Mountainside.
You know, John, Lamont definitely said it best when he referred to it as disease of the brain should not be treated any differently than diseases of the body. You know, this is exactly what is going to help support, you know, those seeking mental health and substance use disorder treatment in Connecticut. You know, going back, it was this past Tuesday on the 8th is when Governor Ned Lamont signed the bill. And really, there's three key points that he really kind of pointed out that is going to, again, bring Connecticut to the forefront of continuing to, you know, help people that are living here, from prohibiting insurance companies and placing the restrictions on mental health, substance use disorder benefits, insurance companies being mandated to offer coverage for addiction and treatment services, and then also the requiring them to file annual reports. This is going to continue to start to get rid of some of those barriers that, you know, those seeking treatment are facing. With that, you know, I know recently and kind of what we see is, you know, from SAMHSA, we found that over 19 million Americans needed addiction treatment and did not receive it. So one third of Americans did not attend treatment because they lacked health coverage. So by creating this, you know, this advancement to the Mental Health Parity Act, it really is going to start to move Connecticut to the forefront and hopefully set an example for the country to be able to say those that seek treatment are going to be able to get it and treat it the same as any other body or, you know, any other disease that affects the body as the brain.
Well, Dan, as this legislation was in play and looking like it was going to get closer and closer to actually happening, and now at the point that it has been signed into law, can you talk a little bit about what Mountainside has done in anticipation of the change in capacity that you're going to be dealing with now that more people will actually have the ability to seek and receive the kind of counseling that Mountainside delivers?
Of course. So when it comes to that, as you mentioned, Mountainside, we've been around for the past 21 years. We've helped, you know, over 15,000 individuals come in. And now with this, you know, being a removal of barriers for those to access treatment, we continue to provide services and reach out to our community. From, you know, our main campus that's located in Canaan, Connecticut, we've also expanded as we see that this is going to continue to, for those seeking treatment, we have an outpatient service that's in Wilton, Connecticut. New York State actually recently passed a very similar act. So we do have outpatients in Chappaqua, New York, as well as Huntington, New York. And with, you know, these expansions and providing services, so we can be, you know, so the barriers is not only just travel of coming to the Northwest corner, but being able to provide all these different outpatient and inpatient residential services. We want to continue to make sure that we're here to provide to people in Connecticut.
Very good. So one of the stipulations of the law is providing court-mandated addiction treatment services. Is that going to be regardless of whether or not the individual has any type of insurance support?
So when it comes to that, I'm sure that there's going to need insurance support. You know, myself personally, I'm a very big fan of gaining treatment over incarceration. I truly believe that those that are going, you know, that need these services and that the boundary is going to be less to get there will benefit more, and we will see crime reductions. I do know over the last year there's some recent statistics that are out there around those leaving from the Department of Corrections and actually having fatal overdoses when it comes to fentanyl. These days it really is like a Russian roulette, you know, when people go back to using that one time and coming from there. But, you know, John, to answer your question, it really is one of those things that with this act, you know, Connecticut, there's many different types of insurances that are out there, and it's going to continue to, you know, raise that bar and raise those standards that people are going to be able to gain access no matter what they're seeking.
Okay. In the last few minutes that we have with you, Dan, let's talk about the role that Mountainside played in getting this law over the goal line and initiated and passed. Do I understand correctly that some of your staff really played an important role on the team that helped inform legislators and government officials to help this initiative pass?
So Mountainside, again, we've been around for 21 years. And when it comes to that, we really have a very deep-rooted community-based approach. When I'm saying community-based, it's going everywhere from attending anything that a town hall might need to sharing our expertise from our experiences, from our licensed clinicians, from our whole treatment team to be able to say, here are some of the pros, here are some of the cons, here's what we're seeing as trends, here's some of the data that we are, you know, facing, and being able to assist taking, and ultimately it's for the care of our clients. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that are really coming in and giving us this real time, and we're able to take a look at some of the evidence-based practices and say, this is what we need to put in place, and this is what we need to share with the state of Connecticut. So when it comes to us, when it comes to new legislation in total, we continue to have open conversations with our local government. If it's attending roundtables or if it's attending you know, process groups and kind of brainstorming groups, everything from task force to opioid roundtables, we continue to support you know, our local government with that. I know, you know, Sean Scanlon down in Southern Connecticut has played a huge role, you know, and hats off to everything that he's really done to continue to push this through. And when it comes to Mountainside, we always want to continue to be there as a support. Our phones are always there to answer any questions, you know, assist with anything that we're seeing that's out there. All the way down to, you know, next week, we're attending some roundtables down in D.C. for CT in the Capitol with both Blumenthal and Murphy, just to continue these discussions when it comes to opioids.
Great. Mountainside Treatment Center celebrating the passage of the new legislation just signed into law by Governor Ned Lamont that will dramatically widen access to addiction and mental health services. This new Mental Health Parity Act is going to ensure affordable treatment and life-saving care to individuals and families across Connecticut. If you're seeking a measure of care for someone that you love, consider Mountainside, who has been helping thousands and thousands of folks in Connecticut and beyond with their mental health and addiction issues. Mountainside.com is their website. Dan Smith is the Director of Community Development. Thanks for being with us this morning, Dan, and kicking off our conversation on the new Mental Health Parity Act here in Connecticut.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.